Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. Heather Moss is the Deputy Secretary of Operations and Infrastructure at the Washington State Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and has served as the Director of the Department of Early Learning since August of 2017. As Deputy Director of DEL from January 2014 to July 2017, Heather supported the successful administration of Washington's Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant, improved the professional fiscal capacity of the agency, and negotiated multiple contracts with the union representing licensed childcare homes. Prior to joining DEL, Heather was Deputy Director at Child Care Aware of Washington for 4 years, where she helped lead the successful statewide rollout of Early Achievers, Washington's quality rating and improvement system. Heather is in her 18th year of state service in Washington, with her earlier experience including 9 years as a research and senior analyst with the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Committee, and 5 years first as a budget analyst and then policy analyst for the Office of Financial Management. Heather's professional career and personal life are both marked by a strong sense of service, commitment to the social good, and belief in the power of positive relationships. Heather has a master's in public administration from the University of Washington, Evans School of Public Affairs, and a BA from the University of Montana. She lives in Tacoma with her husband, Scott. Their identical twin sons, Dylan and Dustin, attend Western Washington University. Heather, what are you most hopeful about the establishment of the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families?
What I think is really exciting about DCYF is that we get an opportunity to reset. You don't get that very often in any organization, let alone in state government. So we get a total redo. We have a blank slate where we can say, what is it that we want to do to better help children and families succeed in Washington State? We also get a chance to create a new culture around that. So it's not just about the work that we do, it's how we do the work and how we work as a team. And I think that what happens in state government is that we get caught up in the culture that's created with an organization or an agency that's been around for a long, long time, whether that's 10 years at Dell or 40 years at Department of Social and Health Services. So we get to start over, and we get to think about what it is that's important to us as a group of leaders and as a group of staff doing this work, and what values are important to us, and how do we want to live those values and use those values in doing our work.
Well, what is that starting to look like? Because that sounds like a great vision, and I love it when different departments can work together. How do you make that happen?
So a couple of things that I think are most obvious. One is transparency. We talk about the fact that we know what we know, and we share that, and we also don't know a lot of things, and we share that too. So we're not trying to pretend that I, for example, know everything there is to know about child welfare. Many of us in the leadership team have a lot to learn, and we are very open about that and really talking to our colleagues to learn what it is that we need to learn. The other thing, though, that I think is more real and really impacts our staff is that we had an opportunity to identify what policies and procedures we needed as a new agency. And at the beginning of our planning a year ago, we started off with a very long list of all of the policies and procedures we had to have on day one. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the year, we thought more critically about that, and we also had less time to do it. So our thinking got more refined. What do we really need to have in place by day one? And what we started to realize as we got closer to the day is that there are lots of policies and procedures that state agencies put into place over time to fix a specific mistake or prevent a certain thing happening or to protect the agency from liability. A lot of those things make it more complicated for state employees to do their work. And they also make it complicated to understand what all the rules and procedures are. So we have been very reluctant to put in policies and procedures unless we saw a legal need or a worry about process that people didn't understand. So we're starting there with, I think we have maybe a dozen policies and procedures that we started with from hundreds that we gathered from both Dell and DSHS.
The hope and potential of DCYF is the ability to focus on prevention as well as intervention for kids experiencing, say, adverse childhood experiences or ACEs. As we know, that'll depend on breaking down silos and communicating between child welfare and early learning programs and systems. How is the new department putting that infrastructure in place, including improving WA Kids data so that we can target our resources to effectively support families before kindergarten?
So we had the opportunity to think about how we wanted to structure Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And the easy answer would have been, let's take all of the child welfare programs and plunk them here. Let's put all the early learning programs over here. That wouldn't have been anything different than just creating a single administrative structure over two programs that already exist. So we were very thoughtful in how we mixed all of our programs together. We now have a team that is combining early learning and family supports and prevention services that sit right next to our child welfare programs and our foster care recruitment and retention and placement programs. The idea is that all of these programs need to work together, and bringing them to an agency is the start, but then integrating the staff is the next step. So we've made some of those preliminary steps to do that work. What I think we are really hopeful about is that the additional work that we do around connecting these prevention and early intervention programs to the child welfare system is that we see a decrease in child welfare instances in families across the state of Washington. You asked about WAC Kids data specifically, and we're 2 years into now having statewide data on WAC Kids, and it's a great resource for us to understand children's readiness in kindergarten and other domains. With the Office of Innovation, Alignment, and Accountability, we have an opportunity to think about how we use that data more clearly to identify what's worked and then backtrack from that and figure out how we do that and replicate that more with other families. So we're just in the beginning stages. Vicki Ibarra is our research director over OEA, and we are just in the beginning stages of figuring that out, but the WAC Kids data provides us a really rich resource to figure out what the solution is.
And I want to go back to the trauma aspect. I'm wondering, is there some sort of universal training or trauma-informed training that goes to staff, both in early learning and the other agencies as well?
You asked about universal, and I don't think there is anything universal, but it's a good point because we have a lot of trauma-informed care research that we have relied on historically at the Department of Early Learning. I know that trauma-informed care is something that's a big part of the child welfare system. To the extent that those are the same thing, I'm not sure yet. We have a lot more work to do to create an aligned training structure for staff all across the agency.
Your brain doesn't really change once you hit age 5. It's like, well, your brain is your brain, but it is shaped by what happens to you throughout your life.
Well, and on that note, actually, one of the things that we're also recognizing is that we have a real issue of secondary trauma that staff face. Mm-hmm. So not only are we dealing with trauma that children and families are experiencing, but that we have high turnover in our caseworker staff because of the trauma that they experience every day during the work that they do. So we're identifying and trying to understand and address trauma in various levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You can't just leave it at home necessarily when you've seen some of the things that you see.
Absolutely. I think the work that our child welfare workers do is pretty intense, and we can do a better job of supporting them in the day-to-day work that they do.
So currently across the early childhood education sector, instructor compensation would have to double to reach parity with the K-12 system. If you become a kindergarten teacher, at least in Seattle, for example, you get paid almost twice what an early learning educator would get paid. As a result, many center providers struggle to attract and retain instructors. What is Dell working on to address this underlying threat to high-quality care for kids? And how do we ensure that we don't lose the rich racial diversity of early learning providers?
So this is a great question that I'm really excited to talk about. It's a really complicated question, though. So the market of childcare is broken. It's not a functioning market. And by that, I mean we don't have a system where the providers, whether that's childcare providers or some other provider, can set a price based on the costs that they have, and then the market meets that price. And then you reach a state of equilibrium. We are in disequilibrium right now in the childcare economy. And that's mostly because it is a social good. It is not a private sector good. We as a community have never really recognized it that way. I think we partly have when we talk about subsidies for low-income families. And we're doing a lot to help support low-income families to afford quality care. So that's the premise that we're working with that I think is important for us all to understand. From there, the Department of Early Learning has really put a lot of emphasis on quality care. So with a broken market, what happens is parents can't afford much, so childcare providers cut their costs down to the bare minimum so that they can get something that families will be able to afford. Mm-hmm. What that does, though, is that it cuts out professional development, it cuts down on ratios, it cuts down on the training that childcare providers get. And those are all of the exact things that we know make such a difference in child outcomes. So our role as the state of Washington is to ensure that some of those minimum criteria are met to really emphasize child outcomes. So we have minimum requirements around education, minimum requirements around continuing education and professional development, ratios and levels of teachers in different classrooms and with different child ranges. We know that that pushes up cost. Mm-hmm. The ways that we try to address that are continually to advocate for subsidy rate increases. And we are at the bargaining table right now with SEIU 925, who represents child family homes and license exempt providers, having that exact conversation. We talk about that often with our associations of child care centers as well. We would be the first to say that child care providers are underpaid. Mm-hmm. They need to make more because they do every bit as good a work, if not more important work, I would say, than kindergarten teachers, but don't get that same level of compensation. And that's something that we as a society need to address, absolutely.
In terms of looking at the early educator pipeline, other than compensation, are there other things that you would change in order to make that pipeline a little more robust?
Well, one of the things you asked in the earlier question that I forgot to address that gets to this too is the diversity of our early learning workforce.
Yes.
And it is so cool to see that we really do have in the early learning system a great diversity and a really good representation of minority populations across the state in our child care provider community. And what's helpful about that is that children at a young age identify with people who look like them or who look like their parents or who look like their auntie and their uncle. That is so critical and important in the early learning field. And we are doing all that we can to make sure that we continue that, whether it's providing our licensing resources, our quality rating and improvement resources in multiple languages. We offer courses in multiple languages. We often meet with the associations that represent some of the minority communities across the state. So we are doing what we can to advocate for and support those different communities. One of the things, though, that's interesting about it is that the K-12 system has picked up on the fact that we have a very broad representation, and they're starting to recruit for K-12 educators from the early learning field. So there's a little bit of a, we've got what they want, but we also kind of want to keep our people in the really important work of early learning.
Hence the need for compensation.
Absolutely. Yep, totally agree.
Well, Washington State's Child Care and Development Fund, the CCDF, sets stringent provider background check requirements, and some say that it's even more stringent than the federal government, that are set to go into effect in October. While everyone wants to make sure that children are safe in all early learning settings, many providers are concerned that the October implementation will endanger their ability to provide services to our youngest community members. How is Dell working to ensure that providers are supported to fulfill requirements with no interruption of services for children and their families?
So I'm going to go into a little bit of background if I can.
Oh, please.
The Child Care and Development Fund is the state block grant that every state gets from the federal government to fund early learning in its various formats. As a block grant, that means we have some autonomy in deciding how to use the dollars. However, it's the federal government, so there's always some restrictions around that. We are required to write a plan from Washington State every 3 years, and so we are in the process now of just finishing up the touches of our plan that will go into effect this next year. One of the things that happened recently with CCDF is that Congress reauthorized the Authorizing Act in 2014. When they did that, they actually put in a lot more requirements around licensed exempt care. We often refer to that here in Washington as FFN, or Family, Friend, and Neighbor Care. So historically, FFN, or licensed exempt care, has been just that, very hands-off in terms of state services or state intervention or oversight. The 2014 reauthorization increased the expectations around what we do with licensed exempt care. Congress put into place expectations around additional background checks and in-home or in the location of where the care is provided, assessment of the health and safety of that environment, and then also more training within the first 4 months of providing that care. Those are all new requirements that are going to hit our FFN community in a pretty significant way in the coming months. Mm-hmm. We are working actively with SEIU 925 to figure out ways to roll that out so that it doesn't decrease the number of providers we have, but at any given time in Washington State, we have maybe 3,000 to 7,000 FFN providers providing care for children. What we do know is that the background checks that we are requiring in Washington State are for all FFN providers, whereas the federal requirements is just restricted to non-relative care. So that might be where you heard about them being more stringent.
Yeah.
And the reason that we did that is that we feel that our responsibility as a state, a paramount duty in our statute, is to ensure the safety of the children. And we want to do that across the spectrum of any care that's being provided for those children. So that's one change that we made different from the federal regulations.
It seems like it would be hard to scale. I mean, if you've got somewhere between 3,000 and 7,000 FFN providers, how do you do that?
It's not easy, I'll tell you that. They're hard to connect with, honestly, because often family, friend, and neighbor care is the neighbor next door, or it's grandma, or it's your brother-in-law who's home for a few months, and so he can take care of the kids. They don't necessarily identify as child care providers. They are doing a favor for a family, friend, or a neighbor. Mm-hmm. So we have still a lot of work to do outreach with our FFN population, and we're getting help from the union and from associations that they work with across the state.
And what's great about them, though, is that they really do reflect the communities that they serve.
Well, and what's really important, too, about the FFN providers, I agree with you on that for sure, but what's valuable about FFN is that they often are providing the type of care that's hard to find in licensed care, whether that is for a highly individualized special needs child, or if it's in a very remote area, or it's just crazy work hours that mom or dad have that really can't be accommodated in a licensed center. So there are certainly aspects of license-exempt care that are important and critical to our community. There are also opportunities, though, I think, where if we do see a decrease in our FFN population, our anticipation is that some of those children will go into licensed care as well. So we should see an evening out of that care over time.
This question you can answer however you like, because I'm just curious about how you view early learning. If there was no limit to a budget that you could work with, if there were no policy barriers and no pushback, what would you do with early learning in Washington State if you could do whatever you want?
So first, going back to the question or the conversation we had about income and the economy of childcare, I would put buckets more money into subsidy, because child care affordability is not just a low-income family problem. It is a problem that families up to 500% of federal poverty level experience. I mean, it is our middle-income and upper-middle-income families struggle to afford child care, and that should never be something that families worry about. Every family should be able to put their children in high-quality early care for as long as they need that care. So that would be my first big ticket item. But I think more directly what I'd love to see, particularly in light of this new agency, is that we really create a foundation of childcare, early learning, intervention, and prevention programs that are available to families across the state of Washington. You have a baby in your hand, and we are there to help figure out what supports we can provide for you and what help you might need from us, regardless of your race, your ethnicity, regardless of your income level or your education level. These are things that are really important that we support all children. The other thing is that families feel recognized and look to us as a resource, look to the state as a resource. It's challenging to be a regulatory agency that sometimes gets a bad rap for that role, but we also have this whole other side of our organization that is about providing services to families and their children. So I want to make sure that we are seen as a resource across the state. We also want to make sure that every child has the same access, regardless, again, because of what they're born into. The governor was here last week at the kickoff of our new agency, and one of the things he said that really struck me is that poverty is not destiny. And so we want to make sure that we are reaching in and helping out and giving kids and families a step up where they need it, regardless of the history that they come from. But the last thing that I would love to see is that we can use research and use data from our Office of Innovation and Accountability to prove that this really works, that the more money that we put in and the more resources we provide to families early in life, the better those children do, not only in kindergarten where we use WalkKids data, but throughout their history, or throughout their future, I guess I should say. And then we can start seeing the opportunity to decrease juvenile justice detention. We see a less need for high school remediation. We see a drop in correctional use. I mean, these are all grand dreams, right?
Yeah.
But then we take all of that money and we put it back into the early learning system where it really goes. The final thing I'll say about all of that is that that's not such a crazy dream, really, because the legislature did that to a large extent when they created the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Over the 11 years of the Department of Early Learning's existence, the legislature and our executive branch, first with Governor Gregoire and then with Governor Inslee, have really shown a dedication to early learning and have bought into that idea the proven reality that early learning really makes a difference for families and children in the long run. So I think that DCYF is an opportunity for us to double down on that mm-hmm. and to really provide those resources to an even greater population of kids and families.
Have you heard the statistic that for every dollar invested in early learning, the return on that is about $11, like an 11-to-1 ROI?
Yeah, absolutely. So James Heckman out of the Federal Reserve Bank did some research on that. I don't know, it's been 20 years maybe. And I know that our own Institute for Public Policy here in Washington State also did some ROI work. It's pretty powerful. And you can see lots of numbers ranging from $3 return up to $17, I think, in some studies. But it's always a positive return, so it's pretty much a no-brainer.
Heather Moss is the Deputy Secretary of Operations and Infrastructure at the Washington State Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and has served as the Director of the Department of Early Learning since August of 2017. Heather, thank you so much for letting me drop in.
Thank you, Erica. It was great to visit with you.